All right, welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 17. I'm your host, Corey Murphy, here with your host, Daryl Feltner.
What up?
And Nick Keller.
Oh, I don't get host title still. I'm still just the guest host.
No, I said with my...
You said with my host, Daryl, and this guy, Nick, I guess.
It was implied.
Okay.
Have you ever watched wrestling?
I have not.
Like WWE? So, recently, they've done this thing where a guy just shows up in the ring. Like, no entrance, no music, nothing. And then, like, the superstar comes out to his, like, entrance music. You're just that guy on the left.
Am I John Stewart in this situation?
No. You're just the guy on the left, in my ring to the left. In the ring to my left. Just already there, waiting for John Cena to come follow you.
There you go. Alrighty. Cool.
So when it's scripted, then they can have a hero, right? But when it's a fair contest, then there has to be someone on the losing side of every contest. But now it's like, no one's that guy's fan. Let's just have him get his ass kicked.
Yeah, something like that.
And then when he doesn't get his ass kicked and he beats the hero, then everyone's like, that guy's the new hero. Like, that's where the new wrestlers, like...
Yeah, that guy's the nut, yeah.
...become the champions.
If we have any new listeners, this is a podcast about wrestling, pro wrestling, and the like. Not Magic the Gathering, so Magic...
Just the first 3 minutes of all of our episode 17s are like that.
Okay.
So we're going to go on now because there's a lot of stuff to talk about, even though Daryl didn't put that much crap in the show notes and Nick is just
a
color commentary.
I'm a piece of garbage.
No, I'm sure we'll be having to cut ourselves off at the end here because there's a lot of cool stuff going on. Most importantly, there's a lot of PAX Prime news, and I'm sure that you've all heard about all of the spoilers and stuff by now, but we're going to kind of go through those a little bit. Starting with what's called Zendikar Expeditions. And I'm sure, Nick, you haven't really been playing much lately, but I'm sure you've heard about this, have you not?
Correct. I'm not playing actively, but I'm still listening and watching. And
you're still ingesting.
Correct. I'm ingesting. I'm exiling top cards of libraries.
Yeah.
So right. I saw this, and I didn't understand it. So if you could, like... shed some light on it, it would make much more sense.
All right, here's the light being shed, Daryl. Open up your eyes because I'm about to shed some light on you.
All right, shed some light on me, bro.
Don't you want to close your eyes then because the light's going to be blinding?
Close your eyes. I'm going to shed light into your ear holes, Daryl. All
right, sweet.
Zendikar Expeditions is basically like it's kind of like their new version of like the Hidden Treasures, but less rare. The alpha stuff in the packs. So now, like, packs are randomly going to have one of these, like, premium full art, in quotation marks, because it's not really
full art. Yeah, that full art's pretty crappy full art.
Yeah, it's pretty... Well, I think they're going to look good when they're printed, but...
Yeah, but they could have been, like, full art, like, text list, or, like, full art, like,
art.
Yeah.
No, they're just,
full
like,
art,
the foil, Dorrance.
Fetch lands, Zendikar fetch lands, so that's your blue-red...
That's going to be all of them.
Your green, black, your green, blue, your red, white, and your, what am I missing here? The one that doesn't matter so much.
It's going to be all Zendikar, or it's going to be all fetch lands.
Oh, is it really?
Alternate. Yep. There's 25 cards, so it's going to be all 10 fetches, all 10 shocks, and then 5 of the new lag lands.
Okay.
Or tangle lands, whatever you want to call them.
And those ones are going to be full art, too?
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be such a bummer if you happen to get one of these and it happens to be one of those new lands, right? That would be sad.
Right. That would be that would be so bad.
The rarity of these things, though, is just rarer than a foil mythic rare. Slightly less rare. Okay.
Yep.
So, I want you to think about something for a second.
So
how often in your entire life have you opened packs and got a foil mythic rare?
I mean,
personally, like three or four. One in a box, really?
Yeah.
One foil mythic rare in a box, or is it one of these?
It's one a case on average is what somebody did the math to be, is one... of the full art lands in a case. So every six boxes, you're going to average one of these.
Okay, so 1/6 of one in a box is what you're telling me. Not one.
Yes.
That's a different story.
I was talking about a foil mythic, though. Usually, aren't you like usually guaranteed a foil mythic in a box?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, not that often, no. Like, you're usually guaranteed like one or two mythics per box, but I wouldn't say guaranteed foil mythic per box.
I think it's usually like around 3 to 4 mythics, but I don't know if there's any guarantee on... I mean, there's no guarantee on anything.
Right.
But
sure.
I don't know.
There's going to be guaranteed you're going to have a lot of commons.
I don't know how the rarity works and how the print run works when they're doing foils anyway. I know that, like, you know, like, there's a ratio of, like, mythics per rares per uncommons in a pack or whatever, right? But right. does that stay true? Does that same ratio hold for, like, the foils then?
So what we were talking about is we don't know if there's going to be less number of foil. So it takes a spot of the foil. So I think it equally distributes, like, the what foil you get. So it's not just, like, the foil mythics taking all the hits. So, like, I think it just takes place of a random foil card. So it's not just, like, the foil mythics are going to be, like, non-existent in this set because it's going to be dedicated towards the full art lands. It's going to be, like, a random... In case if you were to get a random card, it's going to be a random full art instead one out of a billion times.
Okay.
Is what I understood from it.
Okay. So, basically, your chances of getting one... In six boxes.
Right. One in six boxes, what, that's like 180 packs, 190 packs, something like
and
that?
And that's one of 25 in six boxes. So imagine this. You buy your six boxes. You get your foil full art, we'll say Scalding Tarn, for example. And you want to run in your modern deck. Now, for the rest of your life, you've got three regular Scalding Tarns and one foil full art Scalding Tarns. Unless you're ready to drop whatever that's going to cost to get those things, probably upwards of $80, $90, right? It's got to be more than
the No, it's like going to be like $700 for a Scalding Tarn.
You think so? Is it going to be that bad?
Yeah, it's going to be terrible.
Well, isn't that going to bug the hell out of you when you've got one land that doesn't match the rest? Personally, that would drive me crazy.
Well, then I would just trade the foil full art and keep my regular one.
I suppose, but who's going to trade that? Do you know people?
I know there will be people that will snap pick these up, so I would be willing to snap ship them. Like,
yeah, I think the Arid Mesa is pre-selling for like $350 right now.
Oh my god! All right, that's so insane.
It's insane. So I mean, if the worst fetch or one of the worst fetches is
have you met Legacy players? They like foils a lot.
Well, Derek, you take them out to the East Coast and go to Eternal Weekend. There you go.
Yeah, I will. And I'll get rid of them. Oh, you got some Scalding Tarns you want to get rid of foil for? I'll ship those. Take a 20% cut. Thank you.
No, I get you. I mean, it's sweet. I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest with you. I'm a little hot and cold on it because it's cool that they're doing it. It's like it seems to the consumers as an added incentive in a pack that they already would be buying or opening.
Right.
But at the same time, it seems a little like a money grab.
Right, and it seems like a bad taste in your mouth.
It does,
like,
right?
Because you're just like, oh, I mean, why couldn't you just like release these really cool Steam vents that aren't going to be $800 each?
Right. And it's definitely not a solution to the problem that those lands are just typically expensive.
Right.
Steam vents and Scalding Tarn and
Mystery. Right, if it was like a random, like regular, like fetch land or... Shockland or something like that, like they did in like what was it? Not Gatecrash, Dragon's Maze. That would have been cool because I'm like, oh, okay, you know, like it's Zendikar, so you got like a Zendikar fetch in there. But instead, we got a Zendikar fetch that's just like a bajillion dollars,
right? Right.
Because like you said, nobody's gonna want to like somebody did the math. If they were to do like the big GP for like Vegas for Modern Masters. There would only be 2.2 play sets of each land that would have been opened in that GP. So, there's not going to be a whole lot of play sets of these moving around.
So does that allow them, then, to assume that the risk-reward for this set is so high that they can just, like, lower the value of, like, most of the other rares in it? I mean, it's not like... I don't see it as their goal to be like, okay, we're going to print a set with a bunch of crappy rares. Ha-ha, suck it, consumers. But more like... People are just automatically going to buy this because they know that there's a chance that they're going to pull a $600 card.
Right.
So, I mean, how do you feel about that?
So, I think that'll just make it in the while it's in print, I think it's not going to affect a whole lot because supply and demand is still going to be a thing when it's in print still. So, if you ever need to get, you know, a pack, it's only $4. But once it's out of print, I think it's going to have the Worldwick effect where you now have the chance to open up a $400 card. And it's no longer really available. They're no longer in print. So they're going to skyrocket in price afterwards. So I think I'm going to hoard a couple boxes of this and just let it sit in somewhere and appreciate over time, I think.
Exactly. Well, and like Modern Masters too, where you assume the risk and buy a $10 pack for something that you could get a Tarmogoyf or a foil Tarmogoyf in, and you end up getting whatever Comet Storm or whatever as your rare. You're dropping $10 on a card like that. It already feels bad to open packs, does it not? When you pay it even $4 and you open a pack and you get like a Will Breaker, which I did yesterday.
Yeah.
MTG Origins, 25 cent cards. Yeah.
Tasty.
So there's plenty of that going on. It's like, I don't even buy packs anymore. I get them from the secondary market. But someone's got to buy them, right? The secondary market's got to buy them. And in order for that market to stay healthy, they've got to have enough reason to continue doing what they're doing and enough reason to be buying packs at $4 a pack or, you know, I mean, I'm sure they're buying them by a case.
They buy them for, like, secondary markets, they buy them for, like, $1.75, I'm sure, for a pack if they're large enough.
At retail, right.
Right.
Or at, not retail, but right. You know what I'm saying.
At discount bulk.
Distributor, right.
Right.
Anyways, so that's the thing. I'd like to see more about it as it develops and, you know.
They look gorgeous, though. Like, Jesus. Some of them are just, like, oh, so good looking. What is it? Been, like, Aired Mesa, Steam Vents, and Hallowed Fountain's been spoiled now?
Is that right?
I think that's
it. I haven't seen the Aired Mesa.
The Aired Mesa is actually the nicest one.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, they're going to be great. Like, they look... they look very digital in the picture. Like, they look like the MTG online version of whatever they're going to be.
Right.
And then once, like, stuff like that gets printed, like, it looks even better on, you know, with the foil and everything.
Right.
Oh, they've got the Prairie Stream and Sunken Hollow shown. All of the new lands are...
All the new ones have been spoiled,
yeah.
Let's talk about the new lands, hey?
Let's do it. It's a good transition there. So you want to tell us what those are? Oh, sorry, Daryl.
Okay, before we get into these lands, I have to make a really bad joke.
Okay, let's hear it.
So, I read these lands, and the first thing I thought of was the song It Takes Two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone else already did that, but go on.
And I was like, if the person who wrote the song has, like, a not crappy name, that is, like, a perfect nickname for these lands. Absolutely horrendous. Like... stone awful name.
Well, who is joking that these are the Tango Lands because it takes two to tango?
I've heard that. That's what our group's been calling them, the Tango Lands.
They don't. That word doesn't translate well in any language that's not English. So they're trying to avoid using that as official slow jargon. But.
Right. I think the most common one now is Laglands.
Laglands, yeah, slow lands, as opposed to fast lands in like the Return to Ravnica.
You mean
Scars.
Scars and Meriden. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Try again. Try again.
Misfire. That other, like, revisit set.
So we got to a heated debate in my other group of friends talking about these cards in Modern. Let's talk about it in Standard first before we start talking about possibility in Modern. I think these will be... I don't know how playable they will be in Modern and Standard. I think they'll be good in for, like, the mid-rangey decks that want to play fetch lands into... quote-unquote shock lands, but I don't think aggro decks will want to play these, even if, like, you're mono-colored. Like, it's just coming to play tap is too much of so I think, like, the mid-range, like, Abzan decks or, like, a dragon deck would want to play these. So I think see a lot of play in Standard.
Yeah, I'd agree. Abzan seems, like, perfect for Abzan, who's, like, turn 1 and 2 and 3 already is, like, play tap land. And so now when it's late game and you actually want those lands to come into play on tap so you can cast your Siege Rhino on 4, it happens.
But the only problem with, like, Abzan, I think, though, is that it's, like, very color intensive. And so having to fetch basics or have a lot of basics on the field is rough for them. I guess the Scrylands are going to be going out, so, like, you won't have... like the advantages of playing Scrylands, but they still play a lot of non basics. Where I don't know how, like, because you're not going to turn this on turn 3, like, ever.
So you're never going to have an Urborg in play anymore. So you have to play a Scry. You're going to rotate all of your Scrylands, and I don't think I would exactly play a 1-to-1 relationship of Scrylands to the new dual lands. I'm not 100% sure that's exactly where I want to be. So it opens you up to have this option to play many, many more comes to play on tap lands in your random base, which I think is not ever going to be a net negative. So you can still play super greedy mana bases in like 4 or 5 color decks, but if you're willing to have less great mana, your 2 and 3 color decks will have insanely good mana. because you'll have dual lands that'll come and play on tapped.
Right.
Right.
Well, remember you can fetch these too, right?
Correct. They have the basic land types.
So you don't have to run the full four. I mean, you've got hits on you know, like your four fetch lands that can grab them, or your eight fetch lands that can grab them, depending on the colors. And yeah. I see, like, Canopy Vista being, like, a, you know, like, maybe a three of in, like, an Abzan deck, or a two of in an Abzan deck, where it's just, when you get to that fourth land, if you draw into a Canopy Vista on turn four, you can play it untapped. Or if you draw into a fetch land, you can fetch the Canopy Vista and play that untapped.
Yeah, just
a little bit of extra value.
I'm kind of looking at the fact that, you know, a lot of the problem with a mid-range deck is that in these formats is that your lands come into play tapped. So you're always a turn behind the aggro decks, and you're always a turn too slow against the control decks. So being able to build your mana base in such a way that, you know, if you're willing to take the early color hit on turns one and two to play basic lands, then your mana from turns three on will be so good that you'll be able to regain your tempo against the aggressive decks and be ahead on tempo against the decks.
Right. We should also mention, we're just assuming that everyone knows what these are, but just to be accessible here, they are rare lands. This is a new land cycle that's coming out in Battle for Zendikar. And they're going to be rare, right? Not mythic. I'm looking at this.
Correct, they're rare.
The full art foil ones are mythic, according to the rarity, which means
they're
nothing because they're like
mythic.
Not mythic, you know.
Right.
So anyways, they're rare. Come into play untapped if you control two or more basic lands.
God, we should have done this like 10 minutes ago.
I know, we're like way beyond that, but that's okay.
Yeah, we are in fact past that point. I do think, though, that if the mid-range decks can... Because, like, the interesting thing about the mid-range decks, because I disagree with you that the mid-range decks are so color-intensive.
I think just Abzan, like, solely Abzan is very color-intensive.
So,
like, Charm, Rhino.
And Anafenta. Because you're losing Fleecebane Lion. You have Hangar Backwalker. I'm sure there's, like, another good 2-drop, like, Air of the Wilds that you could play as an aggressive 2-drop if you're looking to go aggressive. So really, you want to obviously hit green, white, black on three, and by just going like basic dual land, as long as you don't draw like double forest or double plains, obviously, then you'll be able to hit all your dual lands and play untapped lands from turn three on, which is huge. I mean, you're still gonna play your four sands of stills because they're just like the best land in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
But you have opened yourself up to much, much more flexibility with your fetch lands by upping your basic counter. Because the Abzan deck is going to have now, after, you know, it's going to have 12 core cards that are Abzan, like straight up green, white, black. And it may not be that Anafenza still gets played as a 4 of, because it may just be that the environment's right for that deep, you know, to build an aggressive build like that. But Siege Rhino will be a 4 of, Abzan Charm will be a 4 of. And so then it's sort of like, how can you shape the rest of your mana base to function in such a way that those lands come into play attack a majority of the time? And so it may be a little harder to hit your Hero's Downfall substitute on turn 3 with black, because you'll have to have like a swamp, and then a land, and then a dual land untapped, unless you're going to miss a color. So it's like, those concessions will be there, but... I think your mana bases will be much, much better, and you'll get much more tempo back based on having these dual lands in the format.
Right. So we already have a cycle like this in Cold Snap that... So besides the shock lands that are two basic land types, you've got the cycle in Cold Snap that comes into play tapped, and it's two land types again, and basically just adds the two different colors. The only upside to that
in
one...
In Cold Snap?
Yeah, and do you remember that? It's an uncommon cycle.
It's not
it was
the
a
land.
Snow land, and it was
it's
like
not
a...
the, it's not the land types.
Yeah, it was. Isn't it?
No.
What's the card?
No.
Let's see. Cold.
I'm gonna mute myself and do some investigation.
Land types. Yeah, go do some investigation. But basically, so my point is, we've got access to this in this effect in Modern already. Now, this is a little bit of an upside because it's got it's a lot of upside because it's got the chance to come and play untapped. I've heard talk about playing like a small number of these in any sort of like three color like mid-range or control deck and even Modern. Have you heard about that, Nick?
So we got into a heated argument, what was it, like 2 or 3 days ago, about if these are going to see any play in Modern.
Uh-huh.
And most of our friends in that group came to the conclusion that they're not Modern playable, but there's one that thinks there are and looked up an article saying a pro thinks it's going to be playable. I saw an article on Reddit that showed like how many decks play, how many basics, and like it came to the conclusion that like on average you're going to have about 2 to 3 basics per deck.
Uh-huh.
So like you needing to be able to get out both basics and then being able to turn that on seems terrible. They seem worse than both like Steam Vents and Sulfur Vols combined. So like if you're playing Steam Vents, like you're going to fetch Steam Vents tapped and then like play Sulfur Falls and like not have to worry about, you know, playing two different basics in a play. So there might be a deck that plays it that's going to be like very heavy one color that plays like all blue and then like splashes red for like Bolt and like that's it. That White might want to play it. Right. So Blue Moon might want to play it.
I think you also see like two color control decks. Like you'll see like in the World Championship, there was like a blue eye control deck, and there was another one recently. Like those decks will play them because they're going to have a plethora of basic lands to be able to fetch because they're two color decks.
So. Correct. Any two color control deck will want to play them, I think. But I don't think those are very prominent in Modern right now. That blue-white one is becoming popular now. And then blue-red moon has fallen out of favor recently because it's a worse version than Grixis, I think.
Yeah, the blue-white one's already got, like, you know, four colonnades, like a Ganjo Castle. It's got, like, Tech Edge. It's got, like, Ghost Quarters and some brews.
Right, and it's like also got the Emira Skyfall or whatever.
Emira Skyrim.
Yeah.
Right. Before we get too far away from the original point here, I was totally wrong about the cold snap lands. I could have sworn there was a tech land or something that had a
base. I was going to say, investigative journalism says that those are just snow lands, Fred.
All right, so I don't know where that came from, but yeah, there's snow lands that are tapped. Whatever. Blah, blah, blah. You know, anyways... So Nick, you're saying that maybe like a mid range. How many would you expect to see in like a controller mid range deck?
I think you'd probably want 2 at the most for like a control deck, maybe 3. But then at that point, like I don't know what point these are much better, if at all, better than the check lands like Sulfur Falls.
Right.
If you're playing like an already heavy blue deck, then you're already having basics.
Honestly, I could see in the 2-color control decks, Hollowed Fountain getting cut and playing these instead. Because you can put basics into play early, and then when you're trying to hit your turn 4 Cryptic land, you can go fetch Tundra, essentially. It plays as Tundra. Fetch Tundra, Cryptic.
It depends on what you're splashing for, though. Like, if you're splashing for Bolt, I don't think you can cut Steam Fence, because you need that turn 1 or 2 play to Bolt something.
Well, it's the same thing as Path, but you can just have a basic mountain in your deck and fetch the basic mountain.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're going to be too popular because I think it's going to have to be specifically like a blue control 2-color deck that wants to play these, and I don't know if there's going to be too many of them because a lot of the, like you said before, the blue-white decks are playing colonnades and like tech edges. So like that's like 6 lands right there that aren't going to be basics, and then you need to play like 8 fetches.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't think they're going to be too good. I mean, I've been proven wrong before on other things, but I don't think they're too. I don't think they're powerful enough, especially when the format's so fast with like Infect and Burn,
right.
Where like you're just like going to be dead turn 4 if you have a tap plan.
And I mean, if they are getting played, they're not going to be played like in. You're not going to have 8 of them in a deck in Modern.
Correct.
Whereas like your Shock Lands, you don't even have 8 Shock Lands in a deck, but the Shock Lands are even in the numbers that they're played in. Are enough to maintain like a $10 price tag. I don't think that these are going to be played enough to like make a financial impact on the cards. They're probably going to drop out of standard and stick around the $1 or $2 mark.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Maybe not $1 or $2. I think they're going to be better than the $1 or $2 bin, but I think they'll probably be like $4 to $6.
All right.
For like the good ones, for like the blue ones.
Yeah, anything with blue in it might make a difference, right?
Right.
I'll give them $3 on the blue ones. Anyways, my theory on this is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I don't see any problem with the three-color mana bases right now in Modern. Particularly, I'm thinking of, like Grixis, like all the Grixis decks out there, Jund, Junk. Like, there's really nothing wrong with those mana bases. And that cost of life to have a land come into play tapped is definitely worth the control you have in allowing that to happen. Most often, that's in the form of, like, a turn two play. When, like, you want to fetch for a shock land, but you still need that second mana for, like, a mana leak or a terminate or some kind of responsive spell. Whereas the alternative is they don't play a card, and then you can fetch the shock land into play tapped. But you don't have that option with these. So you don't want to pigeonhole yourself out of the fetch land. So it's kind of an intricate balance that you have to sort of assume when you're dealing with these. And I just don't think it's a risk that really needs to be taken.
I agree, like, 100% with that. Like, with shock lands, you control whether or not you want to take the damage. Like, it's then you're the pilot of how you control the game with your life total being a resource. But with this, it's a lot harder to control the tempo if you have, like, turn two this and you're just, like, go. So I agree with that completely.
All right, well, let's keep moving then. Couple of things. I'm just going to blast through some more of the spoilers before we go on, and we'll try not to spend too much time on these guys because there's way more to be spoiled in this set. But they did show the new Gideon, and I was pretty excited to see that guy. It's what we've learned in the past from Planeswalkers, especially at this point in the spoilers, is it's so hard to determine how good they're going to be in Standard and in Modern until they get actually tested in the context, or if they get seen, you know, played in the context of the metagame. And we really don't have enough information for Battle for Zendikar. But Daryl, you like it, huh?
Card's great. Nah, you don't even get to finish that sentence. The card is great. Like, so I see this card fitting exactly into the Abzan and, like, mid-range shell.
Wait, Daryl, what does it do first?
So it's a 4-mana Planeswalker. It comes with 4 loyalty, plus 1. It turns into a 5/5 indestructible soldier that can't be dealt damage.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ally as well. I don't know if that's relevant.
Until end of turn.
Until end of turn. It does what Gideon does, because I just assume everyone knows that Gideon is a thing. 0 ability, put a 2/2 white ally knight into play.
Well, it's a knight ally. I didn't know it was a knight ally. I thought it was a knight.
It's an ally.
Mm-hmm.
And -4, you get an emblem that is Glorious Anthem. So I'm going to have to say this card's bonkers, because if you're going to play it in your aggressive deck, you're paying 1 extra mana for a permanent Glorious Anthem your opponent can't kill. If you're going to play it in your mid-range deck, you can make a stream of 2/2s and then make a 5/5. And then after you make a 5/5 one time, you can make a Glorious Anthem to make your tokens bigger. I don't like it in control. But, I mean, you could just play it and make an endless stream of 2/2s if you're really into that. Not great, not horrible. So
yeah, in a mid-range deck.
I think mid-range and aggro decks will benefit the most from this card.
And I don't think it's too bad in control.
It's not great, because you plus one it, and in most of your control decks, you're going to have just, like, 0 things for them to kill, so it's just dead.
Right.
Because it's not indestructible. So you just make a 0 and you make a 2/2.
He is indestructible.
Is he indestructible for real?
Yeah.
When he pluses, he's indestructible.
Did I miss that?
Yeah.
He's indestructible. I think you said it. Didn't you say that?
Yeah, I think you said
it. No, I said he can't be dealt damage.
Oh, he can be dealt damage, can he?
No, he cannot.
Oh, yeah, he has that too.
Yeah. He's indestructible.
That's the Gideon effect. He didn't have indestructible the first time. He got it when he became Gideon Champion of Justice, and they kept it on him when he became Ally of Zendikar, which is
Gideon.
Yeah. So originally Gideon was 6/6 that prevented all damage dealt to it. And then they gave him indestructible but took the prevent all damage away. And now they gave him both of those abilities.
Oh, got it. Yeah. So
now that I know this guy's actually indestructible also, this card's insane in control.
Yeah.
100% this guy, 0, make a knight, plus 1, make a 5/5, attack you. Like, you can actually put them on a very quick clock.
Gideon Champion of Justice was also prevent all damage.
Because they have to. Because
they don't want him to block and then, like, he loses 6 counters.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for correcting me on that.
No problem.
Yeah, this card is... I did not know it was indestructible. This card is insane.
We got all sorts of confusion tonight.
I know.
My bad.
We are horrible.
Hey, so, I don't see why not in control, and I think, Daryl, you turned around on that one too, but...
Yeah, I didn't know it was indestructible. If I'd known it was indestructible, if I'd actually read the card instead of just kind of going off what I remembered it being, Yeah, this card is just fantastic.
He passes the age-old planeswalker test of can he protect himself, and when he spits out a dude for his second ability, that's exactly what he's doing. A 2-2 is a pretty significant size for a body that's gonna defend the planeswalker.
Absolutely, because a lot of times, especially at 4 mana, planeswalkers that you're defending at 4 mana, unless your opponent is playing exactly Abzan and has Enofenza, like, you're blocking 2-2s.
Yep, and he's out of range.
Maybe a 3-3.
He's out of range of the average burn spell of, like, 3 damage, right? Because even when you play that defender there, he's at 4 counters.
Yep.
Standard's going to have no way to instant speed deal with a planeswalker.
Nope.
Efficiently after the rotation happens, because you're not going to have Hero's Downfall. The one you get is a 3-mana sorcery now.
Yep,
the new Hero's Downfall sorcery.
They fixed it, yeah.
So. I mean, it's not that. I mean, it's a very good card, but I don't think it's broken.
I'm not saying it's
broken. Or needed fixed.
No, I think that the patchwork of making a sorcery is much better, because I think you're trading instant versus sorcery for the awakening cost.
Correct.
It's actually a huge late game, making a 4-4 or a 5-5 or something like that.
It is a 4-4, yeah, for 7.
That's 4-4. Okay, yeah. I mean, you're basically saying pay 4 mana, get a 4-4. That's a pretty reasonable rate.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not offended by that at all.
It's kind of interesting that you can do the emblem right away, too. And so right. For 4 mana, like, that's not a very good cost to pay for, like a Glorious Anthem effect. But,
so you're,
but an
you're
emblem is different than Glorious Anthem because you can't interact with it. It's just on the table. It's,
you're paying one extra mana for an indestructible Glorious Anthem.
Right.
But, like, you also have, like, other options as well. That, like, I think most of the time you're going to zero him and then either plus or minus him, depending on board state. I don't think there's going to be a lot of board states where you're just like, well, time to ult, unless you have, like, exactly lethal or something like that. So
jam this guy, make a Glorious Anthem, attack
so I think it's I think it's more Glorious Anthem with a 2-2 is, like, worst-case scenario what it's going to be.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's... I would pay a one-mana kicker on my Glorious Anthem, make a 2-2 token.
Right, and then Anthem's indestructible.
Ah, okay. Yeah,
so it seems all right. Modern applications, do we think he's going to be playable?
Yeah,
I think he makes it in the black-white tokens, 100%.
I think he makes it into exactly black-white tokens. I don't think a whole lot of other decks are going to want to play him.
I think the Naya Allies deck that's been making waves. No, I'm just kidding. The very fringe Naya Allies deck might want to run one of these.
Man, if Gideon had haste.
Yeah, no kidding. But he triggers ally ability every time you play his zero ability, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, that's true. That is nice. That is actually really relevant.
And so that's a Glorious Anthem in itself, because all the allies are going to grow.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. I don't think that deck is going to... Like, the problem with, like, Zoo Swarmy decks that aren't Affinity and Modern is just, like, the format's defined by Bolt, Snap, Bolt.
Yep.
So, like, Champion of the Parish and other, you know, Blade Masters are not going to be able to thrive in a format where it gets bolted in response to the second counter going on to it, so...
No, I get you. The deck is pure jank.
It is pure jank. Unless you're running Harm's Way. I love running Harm's Way in, like, my janky decks like that. For those of you who don't know, Harm's Way is a 1-mana white instant card. Prevent the next 2 damage a source would deal to you or a creature you control.
Oh, yeah, and redirect it.
Yeah, so, like, if they want to, like,
that's awesome.
Bolt your dude and just monster your, like, Bloodlust or whatever. What's the 4-4? Gorklan Rampager.
Yeah.
You just... redirect to their Snapcaster Mage and bada bing, bada boom.
Man, my God, that would be... That card does not see much play in Modern, does it?
It doesn't, but it sees a lot of play in my sideboards. I was playing, like, blue-white-red Delver with 3 of those in the main deck just to, like, protect the Delver from, you know, flip Delver not getting bolted and then you taking 2.
No kidding. Or, like, in a Geist deck that's running, like, Snapcasters and things like that, too, you know?
Correct.
Like, in the event of a blocker.
Right, it's like a 1-mana Lightning Helix a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so that card is good. 59-cent foils, pick them up now.
Yeah, that, okay. All right, and then let's do one more. I said I was going to get to the new version of Hero's Downfall. We might as well hit that. So that is called Ruinous Path. And that is a 3-mana sorcery, same cost as Downfall, black, and white, and colorless. Strike target creature, planeswalker, same text, except for it is a sorcery, that's the difference. And it has Awaken 4, and it's 5 black for that. So that's 7 mana. But the Awaken cost differs on these cards, and so Awaken 4 means that you get a 4/4 land.
Correct.
Does it untap too? What does it say?
No.
No, it doesn't. So you not only have to have 7 lands to cast, you have to have 8 to make it valuable.
You have to make it 8 to have it give it haste, essentially.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not bad value when you do it for 7 and then you get a 4/4 that can swing next turn.
I suppose.
Yeah.
And then you cast it as a sorcery still then, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Fine.
So, like, if you, like, sometimes the Awaken cost is cool because it serves two different functions on the turn that you cast. And if you're playing it defensively and you're like, okay, I'm going to destroy a creature and then I'm going to awaken a land, you've got a blocker, too. Like, that can be a great top deck when you're, like, needing some kind of, like, some kind of gas, you know? But in the event that you're paying 7 mana for a 4/4, I don't know if it really works that way. That seems too mana intensive for me.
I mean, I think it's supposed to be because it's like a limited card. Like, if you were able to destroy their bomb and then get a 4/4 for like 6 or 5 mana, that seems really good, though, right?
Okay, I'm going to name a constructed playable card that saw play in a bunch of modern Brookie Pod decks.
Okay.
And sees play still in Pod.
Okay.
Shriek Maw.
Yeah.
So same card.
Yeah. 7 mana Shriek Maw. 8 mana Shriek Maw. All right. We'll give it 7. Yeah. Shriek Maw doesn't have haste.
Shriek Maw also can't kill a Planeswalker.
That's true.
So, I mean, this is essentially Shriek Maw if you're in the market for it. So, it's also Shriek Maw that can be snapcasted. Worth noting, you could pay the full amount.
Right.
Out of the graveyard, so you can snapcast Awaken it.
Oh, Gerald, if you mean to suggest that this is going to get played in Modern...
I don't think it will, but...
Okay. It sounds like it's in a Tron deck. Blue-black Tron, because you need to get, like, 14 mana.
Worth noting, Jace, Telepath Unbound.
Yeah, there you go. That's true.
Okay.
Anyways.
I knew there was a reason I was thinking of Black Panther's card. Jace, Telepath Unbound. Flashing this back will allow you to awaken it for casting for the awakening cost. So
there was a while when we had Planeswalkers for a good while before we had cards that said destroy target Planeswalker, didn't we? Because if you think back to Lorwyn, there was nothing that did that literally. Ooh. Destroy target Planeswalker. What was the first one we got that did that? Was it
Dreadbore?
It was Dreadbore.
Yep.
And so that was a long time after we had been had Planeswalkers printed that we actually had a spell that dealt with them.
Yep.
Correct.
And so now we've got plenty of them, and it's almost every set's got one. Is it for a limited environment where like the Planeswalkers are just too oppressive because they just like... They just totally smoke you.
Like, if you played Lorwyn Standard... Also, Lorwyn Standard is a bad example of this because fairies just crush everything.
Yeah.
But, like, there are standards where Planeswalkers existed. Lorwyn Standard. Where you needed a way to kill Jace the Mind Sculptor on the cheap. And because you weren't attacking it, certainly, because they were going to cast Wrath of God or have some Squatter Hawks or bounce your guy. So you had to get, you needed a lightning bolt, and if they put it out of bolt range, then you were never killing it. So you had to commit creatures to it. So like your opponent putting Jace the Mind Sculptor into play in Lorwyn Standard was just a disaster. You're just like, I have to commit so many resources to killing this, whether it's a full turn of attacking or a lightning bolt and my smallest creature, or like play a guy to make him bounce and then like bolt, like keep doing that, like, you had to commit so many resources to beating Jace the Mind Sculptor in a format where there was no destroy target Planeswalker effect.
Right.
That they don't want to be without that effect in case one of the Planeswalkers is that powerful.
Well, I got the feeling that flavor-wise, they wanted to avoid that. Like, Planeswalkers were supposed to be so badass that there was nothing that could just kill them in one card. But then they were like, okay, yeah, so Jace happened. And maybe, like, even Karn happened. And Karn ends up with, like, what, 7 counters on him?
When he 10.
10? Okay, 10 counters on plus 1. You can't keep up with that, you know?
No.
Plus 4 every time.
You are a late dead when they card you. So you have to, They had to print an answer to Planeswalkers as they made, like, as these, like, random offshoot Planeswalkers that were very powerful came up.
Right, I think they want to make just, like, a failsafe, like Daryl said, like they did for Decicide. Like, they just want to make something, like, if there is, like, a god or Planeswalker that's, like, really oppressive, that they have, like, they have the tools to deal with it instead of, like, not having the tools to deal with it and then have to, like, ban it or something.
Yeah.
So just having the options of, you know, 3 mana destroy Planeswalker or 2 mana, like, exile a god, is just something that I think they just want to have like a fail safe of, you know, like, oh, this card's really powerful. Well, here's a way to deal with it now.
So that's like the panic button. If they accidentally screw up and they printed one of the gods that was just like totally oppressive in the format, then everyone was like, all right, I'm packing four day aside in my main deck. And yep. Then it's solved. Problem solved, right?
Probably, yes. I mean, if you're playing four day aside, you're probably doing some work.
All right, one more for you. I know we said that was last one, but I got one more. Let's do this quick. Blight Herder. You guys seen that one?
Oh, you're doing the least cool one? You're not doing
this one. This one's cooler than it looks. Blight Herder is a 5-mana.
Unimpressed.
Eldrazi. Now, hold on a second. You got to think about this one before you just write it off, because it's going to kill
you. I already read it. Not impressed.
When you cast Blight Herder, you may put 2 cards from your opponent's exile into their owner's graveyard. If you do, put 3 1-1 colorless Eldrazi Scion tokens onto the battlefield. They have sacrificed this creature, add 1 mana to your mana pool. Now, it doesn't feel like a rare to me. It actually reminds me a lot of like the token generating cards that you've got in Marsh Flitter and stuff like that. No, it's better than Kozilek's Prayer because he gives you 3 1/1 creatures. Those can beat. So that's a 7/8 worth of value for 5 mana. Hand value. I mean,
it reminds me of these creatures from Rise of the Eldrazi, the 5-mana 4-red 3/4 guy or 4/4 guy that made 3 O-1s. Now, granted, they gave him a power this time, so they're better, but they're literally Eldrazi spawns essentially. So, I mean, it did the same essential function.
Well, think of the potential, Daryl. This is, okay, so how about this? I'm going to be bold here. I'm going to say this is a little bit like CGN Commander, but with more raw power.
That is super ambitious, sir.
That is pretty ambitious. So the problem with that comparison is for Blight Herder, you need... Yeah. To have activated ingest or hope that they have delved.
Yeah. Or you cast path or swords, you know, whatever. Right.
You're not going to play this in a format where those are legal.
Hey, we can dream.
Okay, maybe Tron.
So I'm going to assume, or I'm going to guess, we'll put it that way, I'm going to guess that there's going to be some kind of removal piece or some kind of answer piece that comes out that does ingest things without being another Eldrazi that has ingest. There's creatures from the game. Is there something already?
Yeah, there's the one that's been spoiled. It's the Oblivion Sower. You cast Oblivion Sower,
that's an Eldrazi, though.
It's a 3-mana spell. Reveal a fellow's creature. When you cast it, exile creature with
Titan's Presence.
Power. Yeah, Titan's Presence.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, so there's that one.
Cool. Yep.
That's a good card.
That is a good
card. Also, another 3-mana instant that does that. Abzan Charm, right?
Yeah.
I mean, half the time.
Okay, it hits 1, though. You need to get 2. So, just something to think about. Remember, you can do, a suppression field or something.
We're done here.
Or, an Oblivion Stone type effect. And then... Oblivion Ring. Oblivion Ring.
Put it back in their graveyard so they can't get it back and kill you.
That's cute.
So, what we've got now is, Silk Wrap is the version.
Oh, my
right?
God. Lay all
right. All right, all right, all right. Here. We'll move on.
You skipped over the good ones. Fine.
Yeah, I skipped over Ulamog, the one people are talking about most. Nah.
Well, it's your call, guys. You want to talk about Ulamog?
It's a good big dump for EDH. That's my request.
All right. That sums it up, right?
It might be playable in Tron and Modern.
Yeah, in Standard. Yeah, there will be a ramp deck. It'll be in a ramp deck. Cool.
It's good.
Big dump.
All right, and last thing for me, I'm just going to say, also related to the PAX Prime, and you all know about it already, the World Championship went on. Which is such a misnomer because it's only a 25-person tournament. How many rounds is that with 25 people?
It's a 16-round tournament.
It's a 16-round tournament because it's 2 different events, so it's Standard and Modern, right? So 8 rounds of each, is that how it goes?
No. I think it's Standard, Modern Masters, Draft.
Oh, and Draft, okay.
And then something else.
Okay, so is it 4 rounds of each? They do a top
8?
Yeah,
I think it's four rounds of each, cut to top 8 or top 4, I think.
All right, well, obviously I didn't watch it, but if you're looking at the results from that tournament and going, wow, Boggles must be really good right now in Modern, then think again, because, these guys played a very small portion of Modern. There's only 25 players representing this metagame, and they're all pros that are trying to, catch each other off guard. So what is the top 8 here, by the way? It's Aura Hexproof. Boggles won the tournament, and Affinity is in 2nd, 3rd, and 4th place.
That's...
Living End is in 5th and 6th place, Blue Red Pyromancer in 7th, and Junk in eighth place. So there are very few decks that that we've been used to seeing in our top eights in our big modern tournaments lately. So that's the thing. The standard results we've got. Let's see here. I know there was a white deck that was pretty cool. Abzan. Top three. White Weenie. Sand Black's White Weenie deck was pretty sweet, though, in fourth place.
Well, it's not a White Weenie deck. It's...
Well, that's what it's labeled as. It's a White Devotion deck is what it is.
Yeah, it's a White Devotion
deck. So he's running four Wingmate Rock, four Soldier of the Pantheon, four Archangel of Tides, four Knight of the White Orchid, three Hangerback Walker, of course.
Hell did he get away with three Hangerback Walker?
How?
Like, why is not he not four, playing is four of that card? Yeah,
He's not playing Anafinenzas. He's playing one Anafinenza. So like, it's not like that. I mean, it's still a good card, like obviously, but it's not as broke, right. Like, because he's not running like four Anafinenzas to like break that card.
Activate.
Oh yeah, Anafenza and Nanger Basket. Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like,
activate Nykthos, Hangerback Walker for like five. Go.
Then he pours all that mana to his Master of the Unseen.
Sure.
So he's got four of those. He's got three Valorous Stance. He's got two Kytheons in here, which is kind of cool. And there's some mana sink in that guy because he's got the Indestructible ability. Not to say that like that's what you're doing with your seven mana, but...
Nope.
Banishing Light. That's the one that you're going to do when you want to ingest alternate.
There you go. Broken. Stop and it. It's broken.
Oh, it's going to be it's gonna cycle out, though.
Stop it. Sad.
Well, to be honest with you... I was most excited about this deck because of the Archangel of Tides. That's a card that seems like it's really good and just is not getting played yet. But once it finds a home, I think it's gonna be pretty oppressive.
Yeah, I think that deck that card's so close to being modern playable to stop Twin, but the last Twin can tap her, so it doesn't matter. So it's really sad that she's not modern playable.
Oh yeah, because it has to be untapped for it.
Correct. That's so they bad. Make 1,000 tokens, and then the last one taps down Archangel of Ties, and you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
So that's sad. I was really excited. I was so excited when she was spoiled. Like, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be like a better version of Linvala, just because she's a 3/5, and it's like an actually good ability.
Right, so, right.
Nope.
But it's sad.
Not to mention, Knight of the White Orchid is an insane card. If you play it right, you can ramp from 3 mana to 4 mana on your turn. When your opponent has 3 in play, you've got 2 in play. You play the knight first. The planes comes in play untapped. Do you realize that? And it just says planes. It doesn't say basic. So you can search for... Well, now you can search for the new Tangle Lands, right?
Yeah, the Tangle Lands, yeah.
And with 2 white mana, like if you're playing like a white deck splash another color, like you'd be playing realistically like 2 basic planes... Knight of the White Orchid, Tangleland that gets you white and your other color.
So, this is going to sound kind of crazy.
What?
Is this like the direction of the new Abzan deck? Because like you're losing Thoughtseize and stuff like that. Do you think that Abzan ends up like green, white, splash, black? So like you like can play a card like Knight of the White Orchid, go get your Tangleland swap so that you have black. And then, like, go to town? I don't know if, like, they'll print all 10 immediately. And yeah, if they
I think
do,
it's going to be 5/5.
Gross.
Fortunately, your choices are green and blue, though, which are, like, the best choices, right?
Right.
You can run the Canopy Feasts.
Like, you can't run Abzan with that. You can't run, like, the...
Yeah, you need the black-white one, because your splash is black. So, right, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay, moving on.
I could see a green-white deck with that kind of tech going on, though.
I think, right. This deck looks like it's going to be very good moving forward with rotation, because it's not losing, like, anything. It's losing Soldier of the Pantheon, but who cares? You can find another 2-drop that does that.
Right, right. It's losing Nykthos, though. That's pretty important.
Oh, and it's losing Brimaz. Brimaz is pretty good. And Nykthos. Nykthos is alright.
It'll just replace all the lost cards with more Hangerback Walkers.
Right, exactly.
Get up
14
to like 10 or 12 of those guys.
Right. Yeah, no problem.
All right. Anyways, that's all I got. So, Daryl, I'm going to pass it on to you, man.
I played more Magic than any human being should play last weekend.
I don't think that's true.
I played 24 rounds of Magic in 3 days.
Wow. Was that all one tournament? That was the Invitational?
No, it was 2 tournaments. First one is the Invitational. I played 16 rounds.
Yeah.
I day two'd the Invitational. I went 6-2 on day one.
Uh-huh.
Was a combat step because I didn't know how to combat. And I was kind of learning how to do that on the fly on day one. I was a combat step away from 7-1 in day one. And then my decks turned around and took a big poop on me. But I played all the rounds. So 8 rounds of standard, 8 rounds of modern.
Nice.
Or legacy. So 8 rounds of standard, 8 rounds of legacy. And then I played 7 rounds of modern the next day. Could have played 8, but decided I wanted to get out of New Jersey, which is the literal worst place on the planet. You can't turn left there at all. And
they're not ambiturners, Daryl.
They're not, dude. It's Le Horrible.
Yeah, that's...
And the turnpike is the biggest screw job ever. So, like, I got on the turnpike, and so they have no places for you to pay cash. So they give you a ticket. And you have to give them the ticket when you get off of the turnpike. But the place I got off the turnpike had no ticket stations. And so I went through an easy pass and missed the toll because I don't have an easy pass. And then I got back on the turnpike, went through an easy pass, missed the toll because I don't have an easy pass. And then they didn't give me a second ticket. And so I drove to the end of the turnpike to get back into Baltimore, or to get back into Delaware so I could go back to Baltimore. And they're like, oh, you have a lost ticket. Here's a $13 charge instead of a $6.50 one. So, literal worst place ever. And I don't want to go there for any reason ever. But the turnpike.
We no longer have listeners in New Jersey.
That's fine. But the tournament was super fun. The format was awesome. I liked the. It was just cool, like, just varied enough to, like, keep playing 8 rounds of Magic fresh. Like, I've never felt like that mentally fresh after playing 8 rounds of Magic. Because you just flip formats in the middle, and it was just a real smooth transition. They did a good job, you know, in the tournament. Like, the first part was kind of weird because I didn't know what was going on, and they only took your legacy deck list, and then 4 rounds later they had another player meeting and took your standard deck list. That seemed a little weird. But, like, after I got over that hump, like, very smooth tournament, keeps you very fresh. A huge fan of the format.
Cool. Wait, did you play Miracles?
I played Blue Red Miracles main with a main deck Piranhas, which was the best card in my deck. I won every game I put Piranhas into play in, and it won me 3 matches by itself. So it took me 2-3-1 on day one. And I played Hangerback Abzan because I had no real time to test for standard. And I hate standard, air quotes. I played like 8 rounds of just standard with Hangerback Abzan against a bunch of random decks. And I love standard. This format is awesome. Yeah. I don't want to buy standard cards, but this format is excellent, and I would not mind playing it again. So I had a very good time playing it.
So you're on the Hangerback Walker side of the debate.
I just liked the format. I just picked the Hangerback Abzan deck because it like was the deck that won the last GP. So I was just like, give me the best deck. And one of my friends was like, that's Hangerback Abzan. Here's the list. I was like, all right, buy that. Ship it to me. Ship it back to Spare Deck. I used our friend's Spare Deck for episode like 1 or 2. I can't remember when we talked about Spare Deck. But I used that service. It was very, very good. My cards arrived in a box on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I shipped them back. They got them today. They sent me a notification telling me they got the cards back. And our transaction was complete.
Oh, that's
very smooth process. Yeah.
How much was it to like rent the whole deck then?
$40.
That's not too bad at all. Like, that's a really good way to, like, if you have a weekend and you don't have a standard deck, that seems like a...
Yes, that's cool exactly, thing. But we covered that in, like, episode 2.
Yeah, Daryl learned about that right here on Card Knock Life.
Yeah, right here on the CardKnockLifePodcast.com. and I have to say, they do it for Modern, too. So if you're in the market to play a Tarmogoyf deck and you can't get your hands on the cards... Try them out for Modern. I'm sure it'll be a little more expensive to rent. But no Popper.
Buy it for $20.
But, no, kudos to Spare Deck for being awesome and sending the cards on time. And kudos to Star City for running a good tournament. Boo 30 to New Jersey for being New Jersey.
Yeah, well, you know, guys, New Jersey people, Daryl might think that, but I don't.
You've never been in New Jersey.
I haven't, but I can only imagine it's a warm Christmas land full of all sorts of friendly people.
Warm
and
Christmas
land. The people are cool. The people are cool.
But that's what makes it better.
But the state is horrible, eh? Like, the roads and the turning horrible. Okay. The people are fine.
All right, so here's the thing. You're going to give him props for surviving in such a terrible place.
Yes, they do get props for living in the literal the dirt works.
Yeah, so you go Glen Coco.
All right, and so I do have one thing about the Invitational. Sort of, the Invitational was littered with Green Red Devotion decks and Standard in the top, in the, like, 7-1 decks. Not really much to say about that. That deck's rotating shortly.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll survive. I know there will be a green-red ramp deck. They've given us the tools with the, like, 4-mana artifact that you can cash in to draw 2 cards and explosive vegetation. If they give us a 2-mana ramp spell, that a ramp decks will be a thing again, and that'll be cool. So,
well, you've got Shaman of the Forgotten Ways.
Yeah, I was thinking more of a 2-mana ramp spell that wasn't a creature.
Yeah, well, he's 3 so anyway, but...
Yeah. But no, so ramp decks are getting to become a thing again, and that's cool. They gave us Colony Heart Expedition, I guess. They'll probably give us that back. But that kind of takes a little time to get turned on, so... but no, so... The green-red deck will probably exist in some fashion or format. I don't know. But the thing I wanted to focus on was Legacy. I'm going to name a card. And I want you to guess how many decks it was in the top 8 of Legacy.
7 Brainstorm.
Brainstorm, it was 7, correct. there was 1 non-Brainstorm deck, but it was also blue. How many decks played Dignitite?
7.
Out of the top 8?
Of the top 8.
I would guess that like 4 of them did.
I'd say 7 if 7 are Brainstorm.
Nick's the winner. It's 7.
Yeah, I suppose if you got Brainstorm.
And then how many of them played Delver Secrets?
2?
Yeah, well, let's go with 5 of those.
We have a winner. 5.
Wow. All
right.
5 Delvers. So they won't ban Brainstorm because people will riot if Brainstorm gets banned in this format. They can't ban Force of Will. Because then you have decks like Goblin Turbulcher running rampant all over the planet. So yeah, I think they need to ban a blue card. I think it's one of those two.
Time.
Yeah, I think it's Time or Delver. I don't know which one. I have fallen on the side of the Dig Through Time.
I don't think they can ban Delver. It's not... I mean... It's a very good card, yes, but I think Dig Through Times is definitely the culprit of...
I agree.
Like...
So, but I mean, this top 8 kind of puts the writing on the wall. 7 of the 8 decks, Dig Through Time decks. Yeah, and then once you get out of the top 8, you know, you're just looking at the decks that went 7-1-1, you'll see some lands and some elves, you know, some non-blue decks, but... Miracle is another Dig Through Time deck. Reanimator, probably playing Dig Through Time, but I'm not sure. Grixis Control, Dig Through Time. Grixis Delver, Dig Through Time. Death of Dexes, nope. Omnitail, very obvious Dig Through Time deck. Infect plays some Dig Through Times, but not like infinite. Deathblade, Dig Through Time deck. Grixis Delver, Dig Through Time deck. Grixis Delver, Dig Through Time deck. So you're looking at just like, I would say of the 7-1 or 6-1-1 or better decks, probably 75 to 80% of them are playing Dig Through Time.
Wow.
That's probably not good.
No, I don't think so.
So man, that card probably needs to go.
Was Delver as present as it is now before Dig Through Time was around?
Yeah. Delver played much more in a Stifle shell.
Okay.
So you would see your Delver decks play 4 Stifle, 4 Days, 4 Wasteland.
Yeah.
And now in the Dig Through Time shells, you're seeing kind of some variants. Some of them, like the Grixis Delver decks, I don't know. They're like a lot of them will play 4 Stifle or 4 Days, 4 Wasteland.
Uh-huh.
But then it's kind of variants on how they play out. Like the Grixis Delver deck, not playing like so they're playing the full 4 Days. So like the Dig Through Times, were different. Like they were either cantrips or something different in the deck. Or they were like more counter spells like Spell Pierces 2 and 3 and stuff like that. Whereas with Dig Through Time, it just gives them this like super resilient card advantage engine. That's why you'd see a lot of Rug Delver decks, because without Dig Through Time, the Rug Delver decks would just, and the Grix, or the Bug Delver decks would play mainboard Sylvan Library.
Hmm.
So they had a mainboard card advantage engine that worked similarly to Dig Through Time. So I cannot wait for Dinky Time to go away. Because it needs to go away.
Yep.
But that's my small piece on the Legacy.
Is it going to go away is my counter argument. I agree it's powerful, but if it's not quote-unquote warping the format, if it's only like knocking out the GBX decks out of the format into being blue X decks, like it's like the meta's not hurting, like because they don't care about the colors of the meta, they just care about like an overall meta, because you just listed about like 12 decks that run it, which means that's it's 12 decks that right, are in the meta.
If you look at it, you know, Grixis Delver versus Bug Delver versus Rug Delver, they all play out a little differently because of the tools they have effective to them, but most people will lump them as Delver. And then like Stoneblade versus Miracles versus, they're going to label them as control decks.
Right.
Like, so they will function sort of similarly. One will be more of an aggro control, one will be more of a combo control. But I think the real reason that Dooku Time needs to get the ban, on top of, you know, seven of our eight top eight decks, you know, Dooku Time dominating the top decks, is just the Omnitail deck. Like,
correct.
It's Omnitail just so is abusive good. With Dooku Time. And if you banned Show and Tell, that fixed a lot of the problem. Then they'd have to play, like, Eureka to get around and put their Omniscience into play. Or like Dream Halls, discard a blue card, play Omniscience, and then do it that way. But like having this A plus B combo deck that can just be like, oh, these all seem to be a bunch of cool, and in turn Dig Through Time, oh, Show and Tell Omniscience, draw, oh, an Emrakul, you're dead. Like, that's not a thing that's healthy for Legacy when it can abuse the card as powerful. Like,
correct.
It's the fact that the card is so abusable by like that deck. And then it kind of homogenizes all of the blue decks to be 4 Ponder, 4 Brainstorm, 4 Gitaxian Probe, some number of Dig Through Time, and then like however else you want to fill in your shell, whether it's with, you know, Thoughtseize and Stoneforge and, you know, X or Pyromancer. And
I'm surprised they didn't do what they did for Modern and just ban them Treasure Cruise and that at the same time, because I think it's even more abusive in Legacy than it is in Modern.
So the problem with it was is that Dig Through Time saw zero play when Treasure Cruise was legal, because
right.
Treasure Cruise literally warped the format into this
Delver
like
versus
very, yeah. Well, no, it's just this a very abusive Delver deck that warped its build around playing Young Pyromancer and Treasure Cruise,
Swift Spear, yeah,
and Swift Spear was just like the only deck.
Correct.
And then like you tried to beat it, and sometimes you just got Treasure Cruise, or sometimes you just got double Swift Spear, and there was nothing you could do about it.
Right.
And sometimes you beat it. So, like, that was, like, a complete format warping. This one is more of a minor format warping where, you know, there's not that oppressive Delver-esque giant in the room.
Correct, because it's spread out against so many different decks that can use that card.
Correct. But it's pushing a literal whole class of decks out of the format. Now, because of that, it's giving rise to decks like Mud, because people are playing so many mana cantrips. You're shaving on lands, you get decks like Mud that put Jaws on one and say, ha, your deck does nothing. So, I mean, there is some, like, give and take, but I think it's one of those things that once a card becomes so ubiquitous and so oppressive, like, that it controls a format like that, like Chase the Mind Sculptor did, you'll see...
But Brainstorm is the same ubiquity, if not more so, in Legacy, where, like, it's...
Correct.
So, like, that's like my counter argument. The whole point is, Brainstorm is very ubiquitous, and I don't think I said that.
I agree with the ubiquity of Brainstorm argument, but they're just not going to ban the card.
Correct. That card's not bannable because it's not
kills the
super
format.
Powerful.
It literally kills the format.
Correct. Yes, Legacy is a Brainstorm format.
Correct.
Correct.
But
yeah,
this is why I see like Dig Through Time is sort of the thing that can get the axe and might possibly get the axe just based on all of the tournament showings. It's been like the one card cobbling these decks together that, you know, everyone will fight over Disruption and play like the blue decks. But like before there were diverse trumps. Like you could play Jace, or you could play like Batterskull, or you could play like Tulspeth, or you could play like actual diverse trumps. Now it's just who's your Dig Through Time.
Correct.
That player wins. Like, that's what the blue mirrors come down to. And then so the other decks are like, how can I stop my opponent from playing that really powerful card? And things like Chalice on one and Thalia, when you slow down their velocity, keeps them from playing Dictor Time. And so if you can kill them in that window that you've slowed their velocity down and kept them from playing Dictor Time, then your deck's going to be the most effective. Otherwise, they're going to get enough mana or enough cards in their graveyard to Dictor Time and then bury you in the advantage.
Are you just saying that Chalice on one prevents them from all the cantrips and things that fuel the delve?
Because, correct.
So, all right, gotcha.
It slows the deck down. Like, right. That's what I'm saying with card velocity. Like, Ataxian Probe and a Ponder, you've gained no card advantage, yeah. But you've put two cards in your graveyard for Dictor Time, and you've created card velocity. You're seeing more of your deck. Mm-hmm. So when you slow the decks down that are doing that with Chalice on one, it makes the mission of casting Dictor Time much harder to achieve. So
do you, I mean, we usually get bannings in September. Is that when the next one is?
It'll be with the next set drop. They synchronize set drops with bannings.
Okay.
So when Battle for Zendikar drops,
October
6th. Right, they announce the week before it releases. Like, so that Monday, if it comes out the Friday, they'll say on that Monday what the bans are usually.
Okay. Got it. Yep.
So I think that if any card is likely to get banned in Legacy, it's Show and Tell or I would prefer Dictor Time because
Miracles becomes top tier. If you don't ban, if you ban Show and Tell, then Miracles becomes like the go-to tier one deck.
That's why I'm saying, well, besides the fact that Show and Tell has never been too powerful for Legacy, even with Omniscience, like, if you're playing, like, the problem with Omniscience was that once you got the crappy Enter the Infinite out of your deck and streamlined it with Dictor Time, the deck became just, like, way too explosive. So right. That, like, they just turned to you and sometimes you're just dead. So I think the ubiquity of Dictor Time, once it's pushed out, allows, you know, there to be decks that play different trumps, makes Omniscience a little clunkier of a deck, makes the Show and Tell sneak attack decks that want to do that, you know, more of a two-part combo that they actually have to put forth some effort to put together. Show and Tell's never really been too powerful Legacy, so I don't think that's the card that's really, to keep Show and Tell alive, you could just ban Omniscience and, like, let Sneak and Show and Eureka Show and all the different Show and Tell variants be a thing. But that's a whole other issue that I don't think that banning Omniscience is the answer. I think that banning Dictor Time is the answer. And then in a subset of those things, if you really needed to take more hammers to the format, you could get rid of something like Top or Counterbalance or Show and Tell or Omniscience. Really shake things up. But I think the only truly offensive card is Dictor Time.
Alright. Do you see any bannings in other formats?
Any bannings in other formats? I don't think there will be any bannings in Modern, because, like, really, if you look at the weird inbred meta of the Pro Tour, the World Championship, like, nothing seemed that oppressive. I could see them, for just pure, like, interactivity and gameplay reasons, banning something like Summer Bloom or an Urza Trod Land or something dumb like that. Because these are all just decks that kind of break the game is over on turn three rule. Like, turn three card, eat your land, pretty much the game is over. Unless your opponent's playing like a farm deck, they don't really have a way to fight back. Turn three, you know, Primeval Titan.
Turn three Prime Titan isn't terrible. I think to make that deck better, you ban Hive Mind, because that combo is not interactable if you're not playing, like, blue spells.
Right, right. It makes the deck less consistent to have that second win condition.
Correct. So, like, if you just have to crutch on Prime Time, and you know you only have to work on Prime Time, it's a lot easier to deal with that deck. So, because they can't just, like, turn to you.
Well, so they put all the powerful lands in play, though, and then they just, like, play.
Well, like, that's something that should be, I think, rewarded in a deck.
How do you beat a Sigarda?
You go around it. You go wide.
No, I mean, they're going to hit you for 14 with it. So they play a Prime Time and they do the thing where they put the Stronghold into play, and then they attack you, and they put the Sun Home into play.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have any one of their green creatures is now, like, a 14 power threat, whether it be Dromoka or Sigarda or, like, whatever other green creatures they decide to put into their deck. in the slots that the Hive
it's prime time. That's it.
No, those decks.
They're
going, like,
to play some with Sigarda?
Yeah, if you. No, they play like a Dromoka in their main board, and if you ban Hiveline, you give them four slots to play toolbox green creatures like those others, or Thragtusk, or something that's really resilient.
Well, like, and losing to a resilient creature, I think, is more fine than just losing the game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean that's the point Nate's trying to make, is that it's
the. But you've essentially lost the game. You've essentially lost the game, and it's not because of.
But it feels better, Daryl.
Correct. You're losing to a big fatty that they ramped into.
Right, like, but it's the Amulet of the Summer Bloom that's the problem. It's not whatever they're playing off of the Amulet of the Summer Bloom. I don't care if they kill me with Hive Mind or Cradle Titan or Bob's Burgers. I don't care what they're killing me. It's the fact that they're doing it on turn one or two because they're empowered by this shenanigans of Amulet of Vigor or Summer Bloom. Like, one of those two cards would need to go. I also think you should ban Bristlebrand or Goryeo's Vengeance. Whichever one of those cards is your cup of tea.
I think Goryeo's Vengeance should take the axe as well. It's too powerful now that, like, back when it was released, that card is, like, okay at best.
Yeah,
and
now
that we have
as targets, you could, like, combo with it. Some weird stuff, but we have Bristlebrand and Emrakul.
Bristlebrand and Emrakul are just like, yep.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've kind of had this conversation before, and maybe there's a lot of stuff that could be considered, but I don't see anything actually being on the chopping block just based on the numbers. And
I also think they could bring back Jace or Bloodbraid Elf.
Bring, oh my god, alright, let's not go there.
I mean, those two cards kept each other in check. So if you bring one of them back, you're certainly either obliged to if it's Jace, or safe to if it's Bloodbraid Elf, bring the other one. So, I think those two could come back in tandem. I also think that Ancestral Vision is not too powerful.
But why mess with something that's going well, right? I think Modern is in a good place. They're not going to shake it up like that unless they need to.
I'm just saying these are things that are possible. I'm not saying, like, that's snap coming off this. I'm saying, like, you could realistically unban Jace and Bloodbraid Elf if you unban one or the other.
Correct.
You probably just unban both.
I think you could, but I don't think they're going
to. I think you 1,000% could unban Ancestral Vision Stone, and I don't see any reason they haven't.
Right.
Because that card is way too slow.
And then obviously nothing in Standard. No. Hangerback Walker, not yet, right?
Hanger Dad needs to go.
One day, man. That's going to be the one thing that we're going to hang on to with the rotations. We know that this one artifact creature is just so consistent and so playable in many different kinds of builds that it's like, if you're like starting from new on a deck, why not include Hangerback Walker?
I just can't tell you how sad I am that they're getting rid of the best Calvin in the Standard. Hangerback Walker plus the Johnny Mentor Heroes.
Oh, I thought you said the best common. Yeah, that's a pretty cool combo.
That I killed a lot of people with that combo. That,
you can gain 100 life afterwards, too. Jeez, that's so good.
You just make a 10-power Hangerback.
I know.
And then you kill it with your own Hero's Downfall. And you're like, all right, I got Thopters to kill you. But yeah, that's all I got. Non-magic stuff, anybody?
Nick, how about you, man?
I got Legend in Hearthstone this past month, so that's nifty.
Oh, that's what you've been doing in your hiatus from Magic.
Yeah, I got a mid-range control Paladin deck that I had like an 80% win rate from ranked 5 to Legend.
Oh, nice.
That I just like cruised through. I think a lot of it had help that like, a lot of people are playing with a new set. They're just trying to experiment. And I was just trying to grind to Legends.
Advantage of them, huh?
Right? So I was taking advantage of everybody.
I see that Warlock and Hunter are still on the top of the meta here. No surprise.
I think Paladin is like the go-to like deck now, or at least go-to character, because there's so many different decks you could play with that hero now. Because there's that new Secret Paladin, and then there's like aggro without secrets, and then there's like control and mid-range and Flood. There's a lot of Paladin decks out now.
Oh, I don't know any of the new cards, so I'll have to check them out. Mysterious Challenger?
Yes.
Ooh, that guy looks cool.
That card is actually warping the meta, which is ridiculous.
Put one of each secret from your deck on the battle. Yeah, that's insane.
Right, so you get a 6-mana 6/6, and then you have 5 secrets on the battlefield.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're all bad secrets because they're Paladin ones, though.
Yeah, so, but like, so like, if once they play it, you try to like swing into their board and they have like the get down guy and then they have avenge. So like you try killing anything, the 2-1 secret comes up, dies, the Avenge comes up, and then, like, they have, like, the competitive spirit, so then their whole board is huge after you couldn't kill anything on their board. So, yes, I agree that the secrets are bad, but, like, that card, I think, is almost good enough to make it worthwhile.
So, six mana, six draw five, sold. All right.
Yeah. Did I also mention that every episode 17, we do 5 minutes at the end for Hearthstone?
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm keeping up with the pace.
Every episode 17, without fail.
Good job. What a cheer.
Well, I'm done moving, so that's cool. I don't have any boxes to move anymore, unpack, or any of that jazz, so I just got, like, fractions of a drum set at my dad's house, and we'll probably leave that there for the next couple of years. And
never pick it up.
Yeah. But we're good. First week of school this week, so I got to wake up at 5:30 tomorrow. Getting back in the swing of that. I can't function before 9 o'clock anymore.
You have to actually work for your money now?
Yeah, I know.
What is work?
I know, before the paychecks just kept coming, and I was like, I was still in bed at 12 o'clock when they arrived.
That's great. You're going to pay me, and I'm going to be asleep while you're paying me?
No, I was busy this summer. Anyways, that's what's happening. Daryl, you?
I drove a lot.
No, yeah. You went out to to Somerset.
Yeah, granted, it was to a Magic tournament. I actually got to hang out with a couple of the guys from Madison at the tournament.
Oh, yeah?
To just, like, sit around, drink, chat.
Ah, cool.
Good to see familiar faces.
I have not traveled for a tournament for a long time, and I need to make it happen. With, like, the wedding going on and stuff lately,
East Coast, baby.
Hard to do that. But, yeah, I don't know. East Coast is kind of far, but...
Dude, just get a flight, hop
like
flight,
Indy,
bro.
Indy or Chicago coming up. I'll take a look at the schedule.
Hop flight, man. You get a free hotel room.
Flight. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'll keep an eye out and see if I can get a group together. Maybe we can get the... maybe we can rally and get some Card Knock Life alumni out there.
Yeah, let's say maybe we can rally the ancestors of Card Knock Life.
Yep.
All right, that pun was really bad. F minus.
All right, let's blaze it.
All
right. Do we do that at the end of the episode now?
No.
I can't remember.
We don't
blaze
it
now for so long.
But we do have to pimp ourselves out.
Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com. Or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website. And if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com. That's it. That's all we got. End of episode 17. Thanks for coming, guys.